Good morning. Welcome and thank you very much for being here for another opportunity of rich learning from one another. I am Nancy Heise and I'm standing in for Lonnie Yoder. As you know, his brother died last week. And we are with him in our prayers as he experiences all of the parts of that reality. The family things that we all face, we understand as ministering people how that intersects with our work. And so let's keep Lonnie in our prayers as we spend today together. We have two capstone presentations today. We'll follow the normal format of about a 20-minute presentation, about 10 minutes for questions and answers. We'll invite the first presenter then to go out and meet with anybody who would like to talk with him further while our second presenter gets set up. Our first presenter is Jeff Fletcher, and he's going to be introduced by Mark Thiessen Nation.
It's my privilege to be able to introduce Jeff Fletcher today. Jeff was born in Northern Virginia. He received his Bachelor's of Theology degree from Atlanta Bible College. Ordained to the ministry with the Church of God, Jeff has pastored churches in Illinois, England, Louisiana, South Carolina, and now Virginia. While in Louisiana, he became a certified spiritual director under the auspices of the Archdiocese of New Orleans. He served for several years as a hospice chaplain. In 2010, he completed a clinical pastoral education residency and additional training in end of life through Clemson University and Winthrop College. Since 2011, he has served as a chaplain of the Valley Health Medical System while pastoring a Church of God congregation in Browntown, Virginia. He also serves as pastor's pastor within the Church of God. Jeff has been married to Karen for 33 years, and together they have 11 children and 4 grandchildren, with 3 more expected this spring. After graduating from EMS with his MDiv, Jeff will complete the process to become board certified as a chaplain through the Association of Professional Chaplains and then begin doctoral studies. For fun, Jeff enjoys classical music and classic rock, reading anything and everything, and baseball. He looks forward to being able to once again take naps on Sunday afternoon once he is released from the rigors of EMS. One of the reasons I think Jeff asked me to introduce him was because I think we both realized when I first had him as a student that we resonated theologically at a deep level. And for me, Jeff is a representation. He's an embodiment of the claim that pastors can be scholars. There doesn't need to be a big gap between the academy and serving in the church or being a chaplain. I have rarely, if ever, had a student who's read more broadly than Jeff has. He continues to read, he continues to be a serious student, and it's obvious that his studies seriously inform the way in which he conducts himself as a pastor and as a chaplain. It's been a great gift to have him as a student, and I'm happy to introduce him as he presents on the gift of gratitude, helping people connect to sources of gratitude for improved health.
Good morning. I hope I can live up to that introduction. Thank you, Mark. And I hope I can get my timer to reset properly. Oh, well, I'm never any good at technology, so we'll go. I'm grateful for all of you that came this morning, particularly my family who drove up from Browntown, my wife, my mother, and several of my kids are here. I'm grateful to the faculty that supported me through this process and gave me feedback, and Dorothy Jean and Mark, and particularly Mary, who read through my whole capstone project and gave me some really excellent feedback, so I appreciate that very much. I'm also mindful that today is the 50th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's death, and so I invite us to take a moment of silence to gratefully remember Dr. King at this moment. So, what if there was a pill? You could take this pill, and if you took this pill, it would give you better physical health, better emotional health, improve relationships with others, and a closer relationship with God. One pill. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? What if there was a pill that did all of those things and it was free and there were no negative side effects? Would you be tempted to try it? I think I would be. I would be. I'm sorry. Bad news is that pill doesn't exist. Sorry to get your hopes. That's the bad news. But the good news is, there is good news, there is a practice that I believe when done consistently can do all of those things, and that is the practice of gratitude. I used to think that I was a pretty grateful person. You know, if I got a gift, I would send a thank you note like my mama taught me, right? And if somebody helped me move, then, you know, if it was time for them to move, I'd show up to help them. I thought I was a grateful person. I didn't think I had a problem with gratitude. I would never have thought of myself as an ungrateful person until about 2 years ago. 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and I had to undergo major surgery, and then several months later, I had to undergo several months of treatment of radiation. And it was a difficult time in my life. And it filled me with a lot of questions. I remember reaching out to God, crying out to God, sometimes raging out to God and saying, why? Why did this happen to me? I'm on your side, right? Why don't you pick on somebody who doesn't love you or doesn't care about you? And I may never have said it out loud, but I think laying there in the radiation lab getting ready for a treatment, I can remember thinking, you know, God, I've served you all these years. I kind of feel like maybe you owe me something, right? Not that I was bold enough to say it, but I thought it. And so I realized that one of my growing edges is ingratitude, or to be grateful. And so I spent the best part of the last year studying gratitude. So my capstone project focuses on the practice of gratitude and the benefits and the use of ministry. And I'm going to share with you the fruit of my research on gratitude, greater awareness of the practice of gratitude in my daily life, how I have begun to implement it in my chaplaincy ministry, and then some of the plans that I have going forward to share it with the wider chaplaincy community and publish and make it part of chaplaincy best practices. So to begin with, what is gratitude? Well, Webster defines it as an emotion of the heart, excited by a favor or benefit received. So we feel good about something that we receive, about a benefit, and it causes us to feel good about the person who gave it to us, to be thankful. So, but notice Webster starts off with it's an emotion, and gratitude is an emotion. It is an emotion, but it's a whole lot more than an emotion. It's also an attitude. It's a moral virtue. It's a habit. It's a personality trait. It's a coping response, and it's a spiritual discipline. So you can see this is a big subject to cover in a short period of time. Some key terms: gratitude comes from the Latin word gratia, which means grace. So at the heart of it is grace. The Hebrew word barak means to bless or kneel or to thank. The Greek word charis means grace, kindness, blessing. Eucharistia means thanksgiving. All right, we think about the Eucharist. Gratitude has special meaning in the writings and the theology of the Apostle Paul. Grace is a central concept to Paul's concept of salvation. So I would define gratitude, all these things considered, as a complex of emotions and actions. So it's a feeling, but then it's an action, which are a response to receiving a gift of benevolent blessing from another, often from a deity or God, and then offering a response to the gift. Now, gratitude runs across all religious traditions. You can look in Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity. They all have their own approach to gratitude. Even in philosophy, Cicero said that gratitude was the parent of all other virtues. That's a pretty bold statement. At the other end, Seneca said ingratitude is an abomination, right? So to not be grateful is an abomination. That was very important to the ancients. But for me, the text that's foundational for my study is Romans 1, 20 and 21. So it's providential, Dorothy Jean, that I've been studying Romans during this time period. It's been very, very helpful. In Romans 1, 20, 21, Paul makes a profound statement that still impacts me every time I read it. Ever since the creation of the world, God's eternal power and divine nature, invisible though they are, have been understood and seen through the things he has made, so that they are without excuse. For though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him. But they became futile in their thinking, and their senseless minds were darkened. So this causes James Dunn to label ingratitude as the primal sin, right? The primal sin is ingratitude. And Myra Hooker sees what Paul is doing here is taking two foundational texts from the Hebrew Scriptures, the story of the good creation and the fall in Genesis, and the story of Israel's rejection of God at Mount Horeb and the offering to the golden calf. And in doing so, Paul is placing both Jews and Gentiles on the same equal footing. All are guilty of the original sin of ingratitude. Peter Leithart calls it the original sin, ingratitude. If ingratitude to God, then, for the original gift of creation and the foundation is the foundation of all sin, then the grateful reception of the gift, God's gift through Jesus Christ, is the means of salvation. And so N.T. Wright translates Romans 6:23, the wages paid by sin, you see, are death, but God's free gift is the life of the age to come in the Messiah, Jesus our Lord. And so the question then is, God gives all people, Jews and Gentiles, an opportunity. Having once rejected the gift with ingratitude, now we have a chance to receive the gift that he has given to us in Jesus Christ, both to Jew and to Gentile. But what does it mean to gratefully receive the gift? And throughout the Bible, then, we see examples of God trying to teach us how to give thanks, how to properly show gratitude. So the whole sacrificial system, part of that system involved giving of thanks, thanks offerings, presenting our thanks offerings to God. In the feasts and the festivals, as they would come and celebrate, they would remember God's acts of saving kindness with gratitude, and they would give thanks, and they would sing songs of thanksgiving to God as they celebrated. And then throughout the Bible, there are many, many examples of ingratitude and gratitude. The story in 2 Kings of Naaman the leper, he comes to Elisha the prophet. He's got leprosy, wants to be healed, and he comes to Elisha for healing, and Elisha says, well, go wash in the Jordan River 7 times. And Naaman gets angry. He's full of ingratitude. He says, I can wash in any river. Why do I need to go to the Jordan? And he repents, and then he goes and washes, and he is healed. And so he comes back in gratitude. Now he wants to offer a gift. In fact, he pledges his eternal loyalty to Yahweh because of his gratitude. And then in Luke's gospel is a profound example of gratitude. He uses multiple stories of gratitude. The 10 lepers, who Jesus heals them, says, go show yourself to the priest. 10 are healed. Only one comes back and says thank you to Jesus and worships him. And Jesus notices, says, where are the other 9? Weren't there 10 healed? Where did the other 9 go? Or the story of Zacchaeus, the tax collector. Jesus says, I'm going to come and stay at your house, Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus is so filled with gratitude that he immediately says, I give half of all that I have to the poor, and I will pay restitution to all from whom I have stolen. Or then there's the woman who is at the dinner party with Jesus, and she's washing his feet with her tears and drying them with her hair because she is so grateful for what the Lord has done for her. Or the demonic man who is released from his demonic oppression, and he goes and he tells everybody what the Lord has done for him. Full, rich theology of gratitude. But are there challenges for gratitude? In the first century, in the Roman Empire, in the Roman system, there were challenges to gratitude because the system of benefaction, of benefactors giving to beneficiaries and reciprocity was very, very much a part foundational to the Roman system. And it created a challenge because How do Jews and then later Christians navigate the challenges of living in a society that required this benefaction system when they have entered into a covenant relationship with God? How would they? So they were often seen as ungrateful people. So what Paul does then, for the appropriate response for both Jewish and Gentile believers to God's gracious gift of salvation in Jesus Christ, then, is to show gratitude. And the way that that's done is shown in Romans 12:1, to make themselves, to give themselves back to God as a living sacrifice. So out of gratitude for what God has done for us in Christ, we give ourselves as a living sacrifice to God. So it goes from being this kind of human reciprocity, we're grateful to a benefactor, we owe them a debt of gratitude, we have to pay them back, and we're in this endless cycle. Now it's this, we show gratitude to the Lord for the gifts that he has done for us. Are there barriers to gratitude? What gets in the way of gratitude? Well, the foundational one is pride, narcissistic pride. When somebody feels like the world owes it to them, they're not able to be grateful. If I think the world owes it to me, or if I think that I deserve all of the things that happen to me because of my hard work, then I'm missing out. I have no reason to feel grateful to anyone. So it's the hubris, the pride. So the antidote then is humility. It is to show humility. I still can't forget this incident. It happened about 10 years ago. Kathy Griffin, who is a comedian, gets an Emmy Award. And she goes up to receive her Emmy Award. And as she's going up to the stage, she says, everybody comes up here and they thank God or their family or Jesus. She says, nobody had anything less to do with me getting this award than Jesus. So she says, suck it, Jesus. This award is my God now. And that just stood out to me as an example of ingratitude. Gratitude produces a desire to express that gratitude verbally and to care for the gift and for the giver. We can't help but want to respond with gratitude. And so Psalm 116 says, gracious is the Lord, right? Our righteous God is merciful, right? So God gives the gift. So then the question is, what can I return to the Lord for all of his bounty to me? I will lift up the cup of salvation, right? Lift up the cup and call on the name of the Lord. I will pay my vows to the Lord in the presence of all his people. That desire to respond. But that's only part of the story. That's the theological part of the story. But gratitude, as I said before, has a lot of benefits. And for the last 15 to 20 years, social scientists, psychologists, sociologists have been studying the benefits, the actual benefits that accrue to us for expressing gratitude. One of the first big studies was done by Emmons and McCullough about 20 years ago, counting blessings versus burdens. And what they did was they got these groups of people, and one group wrote down every day the things that they were grateful for. And they did this for several weeks. And the other group wrote down hassles and complaints or other things. And that they did this several different times with several different test groups. And at the end of it, they asked them a series of questions, calculated the results. And the results were pretty staggering. The people that expressed gratitude had fewer physical symptoms. They spent more time exercising. They had less physical pain that they reported. They got more sleep, and their sleep quality was increased. So they said, this is pretty staggering. And it opened up the door for lots of different research projects. Over the next 20 years, I've counted about 30 different research projects that I know of on the benefits of gratitude. And here's some of the things that have turned up. People have higher life satisfaction, more optimism, better connected with others, more pro-social behavior. Other studies find improved ability to cope with daily stress. How many would like to be able to cope better with stress, right? Increased optimism, which helps your immunity so you don't get sick as quickly. Improved kidney function. Lower blood pressure and stress hormone levels, stronger heart. Grateful people appreciate their health more. They take better care of themselves, avoid negative behaviors like smoking, excessive alcohol consumption. Even in the link, because cancer is a very important one to me, there's a link between trauma and cancer diagnoses. They studied thousands of cancer patients and found out when they were able to address the trauma that it connected with the part of the body where the cancer was, and they were able to actually reverse the cancer process. There's just the beginning of research that's being done in this area, but it's very exciting. Then there's benefits to psychological health, greater happiness, more empathy, less aggression, improved self-esteem, reduced risk of anxiety and substance abuse disorders. They studied groups of people who experienced trauma, and people that expressed gratitude showed greater resilience. They could bounce back. Reduced burnout and compassion fatigue, important for healthcare workers that often suffer from compassion fatigue. It combats depression by increasing brain levels of dopamine and serotonin. I can go on and on, but this just begins it. Helps with relationships, too. Expressing gratitude in a relationship improves that relationship. Partners are less likely to stray. It creates a positive feedback loop in the relationship. Now, can you have too much of a good thing? Yes, and there can be too much of a good thing when it comes to gratitude, too. It can improve relationships, but if the relationship is with a toxic or unhealthy person, over-focusing on gratitude might cause somebody to not take appropriate or healthy action. If someone's being emotionally, physically, verbally, sexually abused, they should not use gratitude as a cover for the severity of the problem. There is such a thing as Stockholm syndrome or narcissistic victim abuse, where the victim feels gratitude for even not being abused for a short period of time. So you can't use gratitude to cover over serious problems, serious abuse. Now, what about in the midst of suffering and loss? Several of us in this room have experienced suffering and loss recently. It's easy to feel gratitude when everything's going great, right? But what about when things are not going so well? Is there still for gratitude? And the answer is yes. The Apostle Paul wrote, give thanks in all circumstances. But how does that work? Dr. Paul Brand has spent many, many years working with leprosy patients. And he found that one of the chief problems that happens with leprosy patients is they lose the ability to feel pain. And so when they injure themselves, they're not aware that they've injured themselves. So they're not able to care for themselves properly, which can turn a little problem into a big problem, into a life-threatening problem. So Dr. Brand has learned to view even pain with gratitude. He calls it the gift nobody wants. He learned to make gratitude his reflex response to pain. So you can even feel grateful in the midst of pain because it's telling you something's wrong. But recently I had an experience with a hospital patient, young man in his early 40s, had two major strokes, woke up from the second stroke. He'd been in a coma for a month, woke up from his coma, and he was completely blind, not able to see. Imagine waking up, you've lost a month of your life, and you're totally blind. What do you do? And he was depressed, and he was anxious. And the staff asked me to visit him, and I did. And I listened to his story, and then I said, you know, you're going through grief experience. You're processing grief. You're grieving your losses. And we talked about that, and we lamented his losses. But then as I got ready to go, I said, is there anything in all of this for which you can be grateful? Can you find anything to be thankful for? He said, well, let me think about it. And I said, well, I'll come back. Came back the next day. His demeanor was entirely different. And he said, you know, I thought about that question and what I can be grateful for. And he said, I may not get to see my daughter get married, but at least I'm still alive so I can walk her down the aisle. He said, I may not get to see my girlfriend, but at least I can hold her. I'm alive. I can love her. I can feel her love for me. He was able to begin finding reasons to be gratitude, even in the midst of pain and loss and suffering. And then I have two friends of mine who are also pastors who are also going through prostate cancer. And I was sharing with them recently my findings, and one of them said, you know, Bible says in all things give thanks. It doesn't mean to be thankful for everything that happens, but to remain thankful to God. And then last week was Holy Week, and I was reminded of this in a profound way when I realized that Jesus, right before he went to the cross to suffer his passion, gathered with his disciples, celebrated the Passover, and the very end of the Passover is the Hallel, the Thanksgiving. He gave thanks, and that prepared him to go face his suffering. So lament, suffering, pain, and gratitude are not mutually exclusive. Well, So Robert Emmons, after studying all these years, I'm going to go over a little bit. After studying all these years, he says one of the best ways to cultivate gratitude is to establish a daily practice of writing down the things that you're grateful for. Now, that's nothing new to him. Ignatius of Loyola, I studied with the Jesuits. Ignatius taught almost 500 years ago to do an examine of consciousness every day. His directees would sit down and they would write the things for which they were grateful for that day. And so the discipline, the spiritual discipline of gratitude remains powerful. But there are other disciplines. Writing thank you notes actually makes you feel more grateful. Daily meditation and prayer, people who meditate and pray are more grateful. The disciplines of silence, solitude, even fasting. By denying yourself something for a brief period of time, you become more grateful. Try giving up chocolate for a month and then try it. You'll be very grateful for it if you like chocolate. The gratitude visit. Write a letter to somebody telling them how grateful you are to them, and then go to that person and read them the letter. He said it's life-changing. And then a daily gratitude inventory. I've got some handouts that I'll give you afterwards, those of you who want them. And one of them is a daily gratitude inventory. It'll walk you through that process. My own experience, I started several months ago, wanted to keep a 21-day journal, began writing in my journal. After 21 days, I felt so much better that I didn't want to stop. So I've been doing it for several months now. After 8 weeks of giving focused attention to gratitude, I noticed that I felt better, I was sleeping better. I'd even been more successful with weight loss. I've lost more weight during that time than in any other period of time in my life. But one of the items I wrote in my gratitude journal back in February, I said I was thankful for expensive car repairs. That's kind of strange. Why? Well, because I had taken this car all the way down to Atlanta for a conference, and I had a trailer full of furniture that I brought back for my wife, brought it back on the trip, and got home, and it was right after I got back that the car wouldn't start, right? And I had an expensive car repair, yes, but I was able to get it towed in and fixed. But I was grateful that I got all the way down to Atlanta and back. It didn't break down along somewhere along the highway where I had to try and get it back and tow a car and a trailer and all that. So I was able to be grateful even in the midst. I wasn't happy that I had to spend the money, but then I was happy that I had the money to spend, so I was grateful to be able to pay for the repairs. So how have I been using this in my ministry? Well, part of what we as chaplains do is we do spiritual assessments, right? We visit patients, we assess what are their coping resources, where are they at spiritually, emotionally, physically, so forth. And so I began in my assessment to ask the question, for what are you most grateful or for what are you most thankful? And to whom do you express that gratitude? And how do you express that gratitude? And as I've begun tracking that, I noticed that when I do my charting and looking back over it, in the outcomes of the patient encounters, the number of patients that express gratitude has gone way up. So by asking the question and prompting them to think about it, they're beginning to focus on that. And so even while they're in the hospital, they're thinking about gratitude, and that's going to help them get better faster. And so there's a very positive outcome. And then I work with nursing home patients, and I begin talking in our weekly spiritual talks. We've set up a little gratitude jar. Now they can write down things that they're grateful for. They drop it in the jar, right? And then we pull them out and we read them at the end of the week. Staff support. I've talked to the staff about compassion fatigue. The director was so excited about what I shared that she said, I will buy journals for all of the staff who want them if they'll start keeping a gratitude journal. So encouraging that, improved morale among the staff, increased positive relationships among the patients. So going forward, I want to build on some of these. I want to do a study through the hospital, and I've already talked to the director about this. Half of the chaplains will ask the gratitude assessment questions. The other half won't. Then we will compare the outcomes and see what impact that has on the patient care. And then I want to be able to write that up and add it to the body of research for the Association of Professional Chaplains to improve the practice across the disciplines. Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. Am I grateful for my cancer diagnosis? I would say I am grateful for the things that I've learned as a result of it. I've learned more about personal loss and grief and anger with God, ways that I've grown as a person, as one who ministers to others in their pain and suffering and loss. I believe that God has used my experience of cancer to help teach me to grow spiritually in ways that I probably wouldn't have done had I not gone through that experience. So for the things that I've learned through that experience, the ways that I've grown closer to God, I am grateful, because were it not for cancer, I might not have realized how much I needed to grow in this area, and I probably wouldn't be standing here sharing this with you today. Gratitude is a powerful resource. Just a couple of things, and I know I'm over, but one of the resources you can have is a gratitude stone, and they make these little gratitude stones you can carry around in your pocket as a reminder to be grateful. But I found a little thing online. It's a soft one that you can put in your pocket, a soft gratitude stone, probably easier to carry. My wife here, bless her heart, made 30 of these to give to you. So those of you who would like them will have those available. Keep them in your pocket as a reminder to be grateful. And then just one other thing. This is a Pyxis. A Pyxis is a container that holds pills. I keep my medication in this. This is a Pyxis. This is a Pyx. This holds the host. And so my whole point here is that there isn't a pill, but the practice of the Eucharist, the practice of giving thanks, is a powerful tool for ministry. And I hold that out to you for your life and your ministry. Thank you, and God bless you. Please come outside.